Good evening, everybody. Brian Newbert here from GoldenBlack.com, live at the La Quinta Inn at the Austin Airport, following Purdue's 72-68 loss at Texas on Sunday evening. This is our Golden Black Radio Express postgame edition, and it's brought to you by our friends at Follett's Purdue Bookstores, Purdue Federal Credit Union, 6th Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and the Charters Team Remax Ability Plus. Why did Purdue lose on Sunday to Texas in the face of Carson Edwards getting 40 points on 15 of 26 shooting with only one turnover? Certainly the sort of spectacular individual performance one would expect victory to come from, and a particularly meaningful one it would have been for Carson Edwards, who clearly put more into this game from a personal perspective than he probably would most others, regardless of what he said last week about this just being another game for him. I think this was a really important game for him, and I think he represented himself about as well as possible as a basketball player. What he did not get was any help. No one else scored more than Matt Harms' 10 points. Purdue, other than Carson Edwards, was 2 of 18 from three-point range, and Purdue just did not have balance, did not have any secondary scoring, any additional threat. And the reason that was Ryan Klein is apparently in a slump. He was 0 for 6 against Maryland from three-point range, 1 for 9 against Texas. Texas wanted to take him away, per Shaka Smart in the postgame press conference, because they're worried about the prospect of both Edwards and Ryan Klein going off. Whether it was Texas stopping Ryan Klein or Ryan Klein just missing shots he normally would make more often than not, I think it's debatable. I don't know how much Texas really had to do with it. I think he's just in a slump. And this team is not complete enough. It's not balanced enough. It's not experienced enough. And it's not good enough offensively to have significant slippage from some of its known commodities and not feel it. Ryan Klein struggled against Maryland also, but Aaron Wheeler's random emergence with scoring 15 points, I think, offset that. Purdue did not have that sort of performance tonight. But Purdue is going to be hard-pressed to score a lot of points when Ryan Klein's not scoring. But also Evan Boudreau is not scoring, is not producing offensively the way he did earlier in the season. And that has left a couple of voids in terms of what Purdue perhaps grew accustomed to having productivity come from. It just didn't happen tonight, and that kind of left Carson Edwards out on an island. Scoring 40 points, obviously, but just not getting any help from anywhere else on the floor. I thought Matt Harms did some positive things. He's starting to score a little bit here and there, but I think he is probably more of a niche, sort of situational type. Whether in time Purdue is getting the ball inside more to try to balance out its offense a little bit, that's not a known commodity at this point. That's not throwing the ball to Isaac Haas. I think you have to have a good matchup. I think you have to scheme your way into the entry more than you probably did before, where Isaac Haas could just back his way down. You could get it to him and so on and so forth, but a lot more has to go right now with the post operation for it to work. Matt Harms has traveled a number of times upon receiving the post feed. It's not the known commodity it used to be, but from a balance perspective, I do sort of wonder if Purdue doesn't start looking in that direction a little bit more too. They did not try to get the ball inside tonight to Nojel Eastern on the other team's point guard. They've been working on that quite a bit the last few games. They did not try that tonight. So it was basically just all the guards generating the offense, a little bit from Matt Harms away from the basket and in screen and roll stuff, but nothing really in terms of defined interior scoring. Purdue did a good job in the first half, and when I say Purdue, it's synonymous with Carson Edwards, because he was his usage was so heavy tonight, but he did a really good job getting to the basket in the first half, and then in the second half it was mostly his perimeter shooting that got it done. But outside of the difference in the halves between Carson Edwards from the first half to the second half, Purdue really had no balance offensively, and I don't know if they're ever going to be a super balanced team the way they've been in the past, but they have to be better than this, or else they're going to be living and dying with you know, obviously with Carson Edwards more than they'd like to be, and he's not going to get 40 every night. And it was a really impressive 40, though, because he was efficient, he was timely. I think his decision making was pretty good. And any time a player gets 40 points against just one turnover, that's something to savor. I mean, I don't know if savor is the right word there. I'm sorry, I've eaten a lot of barbecue this week, so I'm using food-related terminology, but that's something to really – it's something special. We'll put it that way. 40 points against one turnover is really, really hard to do. Purdue obviously had issues offensively in this game, but also from a defensive perspective, Purdue clearly – was helping off of shooters in order to clog up the lane to prevent Texas from getting all the way to the basket. They're playing the percentages there because Texas, by percentage, coming into this game was a horrible three-point shooting team, a horrible jump shooting team, period. And a 29% three-point shooting team coming in. And then sure enough, Purdue gives it a couple open looks by design and by breakdown, both of them. And Texas ends up shooting 11 of 25 from three-point range. That's good for 44%. The 29% three-point shooting team shoots 44%. But that's what happens when you give people open looks, whether it's a breakdown or whether it's what you're doing systematically. When you give them open looks, they make a couple. Sometimes that kind of stuff snowballs on you, and guys who don't normally make jump shots will make jump shots, especially on their home floor. This was not a decided home court advantage for Texas, but it's still a comfortable environment. And when you see a couple early shots go down, that probably matters for everybody else. And it probably mattered tonight because Texas made all the threes Purdue was banking on them not making, basically. And that's where Purdue lost this game from a defensive perspective, but also they lost it at the foul line. And this was simply... this wasn't Texas attacking off the dribble and getting to the basket or getting the ball on the interior and drawing shooting fouls. This was Purdue just struggling to defend without fouling and then getting gashed by the one-on-one. Because I believe six of Texas's final 8 points in the first half, after which they led by five, came from the foul line, all off of one-on-ones. Texas was 6 of 6 in the final 3.5 minutes. All off one-on-ones. And then for the game, they ended up, I think, either 11 of 12 or 10 of 11 from the foul line off of one-on-ones. I don't think that adds up. I think they were 11 of 12 total. Their last miss in a one-on-one situation didn't come until 20 seconds were left in the game. That set up the possession for Purdue, where they turned it over. Aaron Wheeler lost the ball out of bounds after contact with a secondary defender. Most objective parties who saw the play thought that it was clearly a blocking foul. Matt Painter obviously thought it was a blocking foul. I wouldn't call him an objective party, but I think he knows a foul when he sees one, and it happened right in front of him. Obviously, it was not called. Had it been called, Aaron Wheeler still has to go to the line and make the free throws, tie the game. Texas is still going to have the ball back, but just a lot of stuff didn't go Purdue's way in another close game here on the road, in another opportunity to earn a win that's going to look pretty good on an NCAA tournament resume. And Purdue just doesn't really have a resume right now. They've had opportunities. You can't call Purdue a bad team because they're not winning, because they've been good enough to win. They're just not winning. But you can't call them a good team either, because they're not winning these games that are there to be won. So I guess the caliber of Purdue's team this year thus far, clearly an incomplete, flawed team that has almost been good enough to overcome it a bunch of times in a bunch of big games, but not quite good enough. And that was sort of the story again here at Texas today, just like it was at Florida State, just like it was in Charleston against Virginia Tech in the Charleston Classic title game. And so Purdue gets through this grueling non-conference stretch with no wins really to show for it. One opportunity left next weekend against Notre Dame in the Crossroads Classic. That is not even a true road game. So we know how much true road wins matter on NCAA tournament resumes, and Purdue's not going to have one in out-of-conference play. They've had opportunities, but they've not cashed in on those opportunities. So Purdue's got its work cut out for it the rest of the season if it wants to still be playing in the NCAA tournament in March. So we'll see what happens kind of from here, but that's our Golden Black Radio Express post-game podcast following Purdue's 72-68 loss at the University of Texas, and it's been brought to you by, once again, our friends at Follett's Purdue Bookstores. Purdue Federal Credit Union, 6th Street Dive Restaurant, First Source Bank, East End Grill, and Charter's Team Remax Ability Plus. And I hope everybody enjoyed this. I want to say thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again next weekend after Purdue's Crossroads Classic game against Notre Dame in Indianapolis. So have a good rest of your weekend, everybody.